Welcome to FGGBT. Now, this is the show that takes your favorite fictional science and technology. We make it a reality. We are the Brain Trust. I am the analytical mastermind, Daniel J. Glenn. With me, the physics phenom, Dr. Michael Dennett.
Dan, it is so great to be here. I love just having fun with shows that bring back our childhood. I think you're more in this vein than I am, but I was certainly very much into this show that we will be discussing. I'm keeping it secret because I don't want to spoil it for the audience for another 2 seconds.
Yeah, not quite a secret as the secret of the ooze, but secret nonetheless, of course. And I am a day one fan of this particular topic. And I'm also a day one fan of our enigmatic engineer, Ben Siepser. Ben, is there any ooze that you're keeping secret up there on the Brain Station?
You know, Dan, there's no ooze, but as you know, I'm a big fan of the animals, and I think we should be doing more to help them out. So, you know, I've been giving some animals just a few little tweaks so they can be bodyguards for the rest of the animals. Seems like a good idea, right?
I think it's a fantastic idea. And it's well in line with our topic today. We are finally, you know, we did He-Man recently. We're finally getting to one of my favorite childhood, another favorite childhood franchise, I hate using that word, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, TMNT. We are finally getting them today, and I am a day one turtle fan, Dennett. You mentioned liking them as well. You know, I remember getting the first reprint of the 1984 comic book. I remember having the movie adaptations of the 1990 movie and the Secret of the Ooze comic book. So I go way back, especially in the comic book world, and things were a little different back then, for sure.
They were. Now, unlike you, Dan, and this is true for me across the board, I was not a huge comic book person, but the animated TV series was something I really enjoyed. And then one of the movies, because there's been so many, as goofy as it was, I really enjoyed. But just something we're going to talk about is this is one of those things that my kids have also been able to enjoy their version of. And so there's that shared yet different experience between me and my kids. I think this is the only franchise, since you've put the word out there, Dan, I'll use it. Mm-hmm. I think this is the only franchise that actually has worked that way. Maybe Scooby-Doo comes close.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Scooby-Doo, I don't know if it has the, I don't know if it quite translates as well as it, like that feels very 50s and 60s and maybe into the 70s, like that kind of feel. I think you're right, though. I think Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is multi-generational. We established our multi-generational makeup on our last episode. So, Ben, where do you fall on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles spectrum?
Yeah, so first off, I remember watching the cartoon as a kid, more so than the movies. I think maybe my parents just thought the movies were too silly. I don't know. But I remember watching the cartoon. But the only action figure I can remember owning was a Michelangelo turtle.
Is that right?
But the real issue was one of the neighborhood kids up the street.
Yeah.
He had the really awesome pizza van that shot the plastic pizzas out, and I was very envious that he had that toy, and all I had was just a Michelangelo
alone by himself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. And he's probably the least likely one to be alone, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Michelangelo's the party dude, if the theme song is any indication, for sure. And that theme song, here's what's interesting, jumping ahead, that theme song was written by Chuck Lorre, who I ended up working for on Two and a Half Men. The legendary showrunner wrote that song. A fantastic song that holds up to this day. Unfortunately, his personality did not. So let's talk about the multi-generational nature of this show. It's been around for almost 40 years, guys. 1985. It came out in 1984. This is its 40th anniversary. And, you know, you said it then, and this kind of has all the pieces to be able to form fit for whatever generation that, you know, it needs it, right? So in the 80s, this is the time when Frank Miller was writing very dark comic books. This is the gritty city, New York. Lots of crime, you know, dangerous. You need crime fighters, but, you know, you can't just, this isn't, you know, these aren't fun, happy, go lucky turtles. These are kick butt turtles who really do ninja and people die. There's a lot of blood. These guys are using swords. You know, this isn't like mm-hmm. He-Man using his swords just as like to knock people out. This is like people getting stabbed. So it was a grittier, rougher time back then. But then, as you mentioned, in the 90s, it's a little bit more fun, you know, fun loving. The millennials are a little different. Ended Gen X. And then you get to the new one, Mutant Mayhem, where Gen Z has turned these turtles. Forget about turtles in a hard shell. These guys are soft, soft shell turtles. Real wimpy stuff here, Denon. So it changes, multi-generational. It has changed and adapted with the times.
It sure has. And, you know, I think there's good and bad of that, Dan, right? Like, okay. You do want to appeal. Like, look, unlike Ben, I fluctuate between being a hardcore capitalist and not. Mm-hmm. So the capitalist in me, you know, is like, yeah, I want my market share. I want people to come watch. It does risk occasionally losing your nostalgic audience. Because yeah. I have to say, there were parts of this movie I was just like, nope. And
Mutant Mayhem you're talking about. With this movie, you're talking about the new one, Mutant Mayhem.
The new mm-hmm. one. Mm-hmm. And anyone who has watched our podcast long enough knows that when it comes to movies, I basically have no standards. So mm-hmm. if you get me to reject your movie,
something's wrong. Yeah, so you've done something wrong. Yeah, well, I mean, even in the first movie, the first comic book, Splinter actually is training the turtles to go on an act of vengeance to kill Shredder, which they mm-hmm. do by the end of the comic book. You know, they stab him, he's killed. And he's knocked off of a building. That's where turtles started, okay? where they end is, you know, Splinter, I don't even think he knows karate. I think he's like a chubby dad, couch potato. You know, he's got good advice. But the turtles want to be, you know, and those they wanted to be crime fighters first. These are turtles crime fighting. And now they just want to, like, be with mutants, and it's like all about diversity and like being friends with everybody. Look, maybe that's what this generation wants, but that's not the turtles I remember. I mean, maybe that's, you know, you're pretty soft, Ben. Is that kind of what you're into now?
Well, I mean, for me, it was showing the diversity and acceptance of all the mutants.
There we go.
And turning away from the evil of Superfly.
Sure.
But also, fighting crime's good, Dan.
Yes, it is.
Like, and do you like crime?
Are you pro crime here, Ben? Are you pro crime?
I'm not. They fight crime, Dan. They stop the mob. They figure out who's like supplying Superfly with these weapons and things.
Sure. Okay.
You know, they're doing good work, you know, with April to solve the crime and then save the city from super duper mutant Superfly. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that, you know, and they're at least somewhat genre savvy to like actually fix the problem, whereas when I watch the Secret of the Ooze and like Shredder disappears, they're just like, oh, okay, I guess he's gone, problem solved, mission accomplished. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and then Shredder shows up again, and it's like, come on guys,
yes,
if there's no body, they're not dead.
Right. Yeah, no body, no crime.
Mm-hmm. Well, no body, no dead person, Dan.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No body, mission not accomplished.
Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to get away with murder. Right. Fair enough. And I talk about being genre savvy. Anyone who's podcast savvy and has listened to our show for a while, here's a little nugget for you. You may not know. Is that we actually did a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle episode early on in our first season, and that's our secret episode. It was lost on my computer. I made valiant attempts to save it. We could not. So this is really the secret of our ooze, is this episode. this is what this is going to be. Hopefully, you know, we will we'll live up to that.
I do need to interject. It's also, for those who watched our most previous episode, this is a test of whether or not we can fight time, because I am convinced that this episode will not be lost. But if it is, then we know that time does not want an FGBT Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle episode, probably because it's too many acronyms and letters.
Yeah, a TMNT FGBT EP is what the world doesn't want. Well, should we? I'm guessing there's not a person listening to this who doesn't know who they are. And what's cool about them is their name says everything, right? They are teenaged, they're mutant, they're ninja skilled turtles. Right? I mean, that kind of explains it. The mutant and the turtle, you may not know that they're human, they're anthropomorphic, but I think you kind of get everything. The title's long, it's bulky, but it seems to have held up, and it's descriptive.
It does. I feel like they did make a wise decision. I think you could have put in pizza loving somewhere in the name.
Yes.
If you really wanted to fully describe them. But I think they stopped appropriately. That would have been a few too many letters.
Yeah. And that's the brilliant point. I mean, I'm guessing, Ben, you and I, you know, I don't know about you, Denon, but I know for me especially, the fact that they loved pizza, that was my thing. I love pizza as a kid. Oh, I think all kids love pizza. And that really endears the Turtles to everyone. Because I think we can all, no matter where we stand on the political spectrum, no matter how angry we are at each other, I think pizza can unite humanity. And it really did that with the Turtles and kids of their age.
Well, watching the beginning of Secret of the Ooze and literally everyone in New York is eating pizza certainly made me want to order a pizza.
I mean, I'm from Chicago. New York's the second best pizza city, but it's definitely a great pizza city nonetheless.
Well, Dan, I'm going to drop a bombshell here on our audience. You know, we're well into many seasons, many episodes. Mm-hmm. The longtime viewers know that I do believe the chocolate chip cookie is sort of perfection in every way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What they do not know is if you remove desserts from the category of food.
Which most people do, by the way, I think.
Which most people do, but I don't.
Right.
I do believe pizza is the perfect food from every perspective. Mm-hmm. Nutritionally, you get all your food groups. Maybe not in the ratio you need, but you do get all your food groups.
Yeah. You get the food groups.
Depends on
what
toppings you choose.
Yeah, right. You don't get the food pyramid, which I think is the more modern version. There's probably even something more modern than that, but you get the food groups. You get four. Yeah, you get this quadrants.
It's exact. Ben, I guess fruits and vegetables go together, and you got your tomato sauce. You don't have meat, which is what you want the lowest anyway. Plain pizza is cheese, fruits and vegetables, and bread.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just fruit unless you get vegetable toppings. But
the category is fruit and vegetables, so you get at least one element of the category, Ben.
If you have a fruit or a
separate, but okay.
All I'm saying is you should put some broccoli or green peppers on your pizza.
Definitely, yeah. And nuances. I don't think
nuances, Ben. Nuances.
And mushrooms count as a fruit or vegetable, but they are neither, which is also weird. So there's a fifth food group of just.
Fungi.
I don't know. Anyway, I think it's a perfect food. I think we can all agree that it is perfection.
And just to be clear, I know green peppers are fruits, but nutritionally wise, they're a vegetable. Anyway,
are they? I don't think I realized that peppers are fruits. I guess they are. They have all the seeds on the inside, right? That's what does it.
Yep.
Oh,
exactly.
Learning stuff. Well, you're dropping knowledge, Ben, and I'm going to do the same thing, right? So everyone knows the names of the turtles, right? Raphael, Michelangelo, Leonardo, Donatello. Now, for those who are savvy, they'll know that those are all Renaissance artists. Right. Well, I just did an episode on the theft of the Mona Lisa. And I learned from an art historian that there's actually one of these names is not like the other. And Ben, I know you're going to be disappointed because it's our favorite turtle. Donatello is actually an artist that existed a generation before Michelangelo, Leonardo and Raphael. So the turtle should actually be Michelangelo, Leonardo, Raphael and Titian. Who was a Renaissance artist of the same. But Titian doesn't quite have the same ring as Donatello.
No.
And plus it's Leo, Mike, Rav, and Don, and not Tish.
Well, you need the O at the end.
So this is a point where being historically accurate is not nearly as cool and fun or appropriate or catchy as what we ended up with. But I wanted to put that in. I thought that was a really cool little factoid here. So let's talk about this. Yes,
I have to just tell you with that factoid, I actually knew that, and ironically learned it from a comedian. Uh-huh. Her stand-up comedy, and I'm drawing a total blank on their name, so that's really bad. Mm-hmm. I can add it in the later eras in addition. But they actually managed to work in to their comedy routine the Ninja Turtles and the fact that one of them was not actually a Renaissance artist of the same generation, which I thought was amazing.
That if you can find that, let me know. I'd like to put a link on the website and give them a shout out because that is really cool. I didn't know that. I learned that from this art expert, but I love getting my information from comedians for sure.
Yes.
So let's talk about this new movie. It's called Mutant Mayhem. And, I think I really enjoyed the art. I thought the art was really cool. And I don't mind any sort of reboot. I am not of this mindset that things must stay the same only for me. As much as I would love the world to revolve around me, I have reluctantly come to the conclusion that it does not. So I don't mind these reboots. But I will say that it is a different Turtle world, for sure. You know, but some of the things still remain the same. You know, they are mutants. And mutants play a big role in this new movie. And really, mutants are, in this world, they're basically just scaling up animals, and making them anthropomorphic. So you take a turtle and you make him like a human. You take a rhinoceros, a warthog, a fly. I love that they worked in some of the tertiary characters like the crocodile, Leatherhead, and the gecko, and all these. So they become anthropomorphic. But this is really interesting. And what? And this on the man, right? The land-dwelling manta ray. But what's kind of cool is, you know, we talk about this in He-Man. You know, when you make Stinkor, this human skunk. I really enjoy the thought experiments of taking small-time animal adaptations and scaling them up to human size. This is one of my favorite parts of this entire world.
I love it, Dan. I have one sort of slightly humorous reaction is, and you mentioned it with the land manta ray, it's not clear that all these animals are in that city. So, mm-hmm. You know, where the mutants came from, and did they all migrate? Because this is mutant, like, a safe space? I don't know, right?
Right, okay.
But and I also find it interesting, like, the genetics and the mutation of it, right? It's mm-hmm. not inconceivable to make all of these human size. There would have to be some changes to their basic architecture because we know, you know, it's the whole scaling of mass and volume and area mm-hmm. is interesting. You have to take care of that. But you are taking animals all of very different sizes and making them right. the same rough size, right? And I find that sort of a fascinating physics biology problem.
Okay.
Like, how would you tune your ooze? Like, I would think the ooze would grow everybody by the same factor.
Oh,
not
I
necessarily
see.
Grow them to the same size. But I also mm-hmm. do know that in biology, right,
right.
growth is controlled when a gene turns on or off. So not being a biology expert, but a physics phenom, mm-hmm. I could also see maybe that's the trigger. So the design element of this is very fascinating to me.
Okay.
Yeah, I could see it making sense that they all have like a similar growth regulation such that they all end up roughly, you know, human-sized.
Mm-hmm.
That seems reasonable to me. What's really interesting and perhaps problematic for me is that you have most of them are animals that can conceivably be human-sized, right? You know, rhinos, warthogs,
right?
Mammals, manta ray, a fish, turtles, reptiles. You know, these are animals that do get to the weights and sizes of humans.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have the problem of like the cockroach and the fly, and
right. Yeah.
And insects with exoskeletons do not work at human scale. They don't have lungs. They don't breathe the right way. But, you know, maybe the mutagen also gives them actual lungs and internal organs that are more mammalian large animal-like than how a fly or a cockroach works.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's a good point because, yeah, everything else is roughly human size. I mean, obviously, the turtles aren't as big as a human, but they can get to be large.
But there are tortoises that are 200 pounds.
Right,
and human-ish size. So it's not unrealistic.
Exactly. Yeah. It is. And within a couple standard deviations, maybe. But that
yeah.
a fly to a human, you know, we did a whole episode on the movie The Fly. Disastrous results, to say the least.
Yeah.
And something else in that I just realized from a design point of view, Ben, you kind of mentioned the exoskeleton, the organs, the lungs, and mm-hmm. it made me realize, I think the thing you would most likely forget is to give them the appropriate structures to speak. I think most people do not really remember or realize that our ability to speak is first and fundamentally sort of our mouth, lung, all of that structure. It's a physical thing. It's the ability to make the sounds we can make. There are very few creatures that can make the ranges of sounds we do that we then turn into language. We think of it as a mental thing and getting the brain right. But if you don't get the physics right, I don't care how smart you make your mutants, they're not going to talk.
Well, here's an interesting example, right? Is that so? I just did an episode on cicadas, periodical cicadas. These are insects that come out every 13 or 17 years. They're large flying insects, you know, roughly about 3 or 4 inches long, and harmless, clumsy, harmless. Their whole strategy is to make a bunch of them so everyone eats them and they get sick of them, and then the rest of them can say, okay, finally we can reproduce. That's basically how they work. It's pretty simple strategy. But the males and the females are very distinct in a couple of respects, obviously. But one, the males make all the noise, and the women are silent. And I made the joke before that they really understand perfection, if I'm really being honest with you. But the joke aside, the males make all the noise. They're the only ones with sound structures, right? They have the ability to chirp. They've got they're called timbals. Women, the females, they don't make noise. That's not what they do. And that area is used for eggs and for laying eggs. So they have similar, casings, but different stuff inside. And I think, so if you were to take, you couldn't scale up a female cicada and make them vocal. It's just right. As to your point then, the pieces aren't there. So you have, that becomes a crucial part to communication, unless you're mutants, don't speak, and they communicate in other forms. So this is, it's really important, because that is really a critical piece of mutants in this world, is communication.
And I assume, Dan, I'm just going back to your joke, I just have to make the connection. In an earlier episode, you did make the statement that sign language is perfection.
Absolutely.
So I think your reference was that the female cicada is perfect because it speaks
not
with sign
all.
Language.
No.
And the male is flawed because it makes noise. Right? I put your two perfections together, and that is the only logical conclusion I can come to.
I'm doubling down the other way. Only men should speak. Women should listen. We should go back to the 50s like in our previous episode. That's really what I was saying. That's what
okay.
I'm talking about.
I was being too analytical, I guess.
Yeah, you went the other way. You're being too politically correct, as Ben grunts over there. You know, you guys. I'm being the opposite here. I'm being the misogynist here for comedy's sake here. But for scientific sake, these things become important. You know, the structures are important. I didn't think about the lung capacity. That's a crucial part of this. Can they live at those sizes, given that, you know, we breathe in air. We have structures that can process large amounts of oxygen. A fly, they don't need to process a large amount of it. They're small. They've got a circulatory system that's instantaneous. They don't have like the whole, I don't know all the details here, but it's a lot more simple is what I'm trying to say.
Well, yeah, I mean, insects breathe through holes in their skin. Like they don't have lungs and throats Yeah, breathing tubes. I forgot the fancy name. trachea. There we go.
There it is.
They just don't work that way, and they don't have. They generally speaking don't have circulatory systems either. It's just kind of goo that, because they're small enough, the oxygen can just, you know, penetrate through their whole body, and they don't need these fancy systems. And again, that does not work if you scale it up. They would have to be so mutated to have taken on lungs or some other structure that non-insects have.
Yeah. And in this movie, you know, because I've, you know, human beings on the outside, we're pretty easy to kill. You know, we don't have any natural defenses. We don't have any offensive weapons. Our bite is pathetic. We don't have claws. Our nails, we are an absolute pitiful representation of survival in without technology. We're absolutely helpless, and animals are not. And so in this movie, we see a lot of these animals being scaled up for military purposes. And this is kind of interesting. You know, when you look at the turtles specifically, turtles have a lot of cool advantages. You know, in the medieval times, you know, people running around in, you know, suits of armor. Well, hey, a turtle is born with a suit of armor. It is a suit of armor, right? Like, that's pretty cool. They're not agile. But neither were knights in the medieval times. So there are pros and cons, but I feel like then the goal here is to take a turtle and create a human-like turtle with all the advantages and as few disadvantages as you can possibly have.
I think that's right. And there's two things I immediately think of, because they're obviously going to stand up for the purposes of the show. And the comic book and stuff, we're making them human-like and standing. So you have to worry about center of gravity. So I think you have to do something with the shell and its weight distribution. The obvious solution there is foam. We can talk more about that if you want. I was also thinking about this, and I think leg length matters.
Okay.
I think that's an important, like arm length can matter too a little bit, but you're not using them to walk around. You're using them to do other stuff. And the key place this comes into me for me is when you do use being on your back as a key fighting move, whether you're spinning on your shell or doing other things,
yes,
you want to be able to get up quickly. So you need legs that are long enough that they come out of your shell, bend, and can hit the ground. So you can do those cool, you know, stand up flips from 2 feet that I see like, dancers do and martial artists do,
like a kick,
or other
a kip
motions.
Up.
Yeah. Is that what it's called? Yeah. So I think that's where I'm starting with, Dan. Weight distribution and leg length are, for me, the sort of the key biological, physical, like, transitions you want to make.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, and the arm length is important, too, because how are you going to wield a katana or a bow staff or sai or nunchucks if your arms are little stubby things like actual turtles have.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. Definitely. It's important. I didn't just put it in my top two, Ben.
Right. Fair enough. It's very important. Well, because they do have
but
advantages.
Third.
Definitely number three. They do have advantages, right? Like that shell is a huge advantage. I mean, depending on how durable it is, right? But we're not talking about protecting against guns or projectiles, you know, or anything like that. Maybe arrows, but, you know, anything stronger than a 9mm, let's say, you're going to have problems. It's going to go through the shell. Right. You're going to have damage. But other than that, hand fighting, bows, katanas, any sort of ninja type weapons, shells are pretty useful. And they do have a front piece to this as well. That's also hard. Right. Like most animals, their underneath is very soft. And that's what, you know, like when a lion or tiger catches you, they're trying to rip out your neck and gut you from the inside. That's where you're soft. We're soft all over. Some of us more so than others. But, you know, that's the advantage. Right. So turtles do have that. But as you mentioned, the center of gravity, it is really messed up. So even if we could get their legs long, arms long to be able to do some of these ninja moves, that center gravity from a karate standpoint really throws things off. You know, you got to do something completely different to counterbalance that.
And that's where I think I mentioned foam, and I know people think it's a joke, but it's real, right? Foam does exist.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think here this is where material science comes in, and already bone as a structure is not a uniform solid material. In fact, it's known that if you break a bone, it grows back stronger because the microfractures create strength that wasn't in the original structure. So really the structure of the shell can maintain its strength while redistributing its weight, I believe.
Okay.
And you know, you can do some things like, okay, maybe the front becomes a little heavier. Maybe you get a little turtle bulge, right? The front kind of gains a little bit of a shape and has a counterweight to the back.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. These are some, I think, clever things you could do because you are mutating them. So you have some flexibility in what you do with the shell.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're mutating at random. Mutagen is kind of like, because these aren't created in a lab. And that's what gets tricky here. It's like mutagen, this substance that causes these mutations, it has to be really engineered so that it does these things right naturally. Yeah. And there might be trial and error too.
I was going to say, Dan.
I would have to say though, it's not that random because all four turtles end up with the exact same body plan. So there is some level of control there.
Yeah.
Or otherwise you'd have four very differently mutated turtles.
Yeah, that's true. But they can skateboard and they have no problem with martial arts. So whatever that weight balance, they figured it out use it to their advantage for sure.
They definitely figured it out.
Yeah. Well, and it's what's funny about the ninja part of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is that this was really a joke. You know, Eastman and Laird, when they were kind of spitballing what to do, really the turtles are kind of this amalgamation of all these popular things that were going on at the time, which was like anthropomorphic animals, you know, a gritty type of storytelling. I didn't know that Daredevil, that storyline plays a huge role. You know, we see in the first comic book that a passerby carrying the turtles gets hit in the eyes with this radioactive substance. And the Hand are who fights Daredevil, which is the foot soldiers, you know, are what fights who the turtles fight is this underground ninja force. So there's a lot of factors here. And my point is, they were making a joke at what would be the slowest animal doing the quickest thing, and a slow, cold-blooded reptile as a martial artist was a funny joke to them, and they were just kind of had that moment where they're like, aha, let's do this thing. So that's how it came to be. So they purposefully made animals that would not be good ninjas and then turned them into good ninjas. But we could talk about that then, and you know, making a martial art for a turtle, I think would have to be thought out, and you'd have to do a lot of tinkering with current martial arts philosophies.
Yes. However, let's just establish a few key starting points that make this brilliant, Dan.
Oh, okay, let's do it.
They may thought they were doing a joke, but they forgot their Aesop's fable, The Tortoise and the Hare, where we all learn that the tortoise is actually faster than the hare. So speed is not an issue for our turtles. Because the tortoise wins the race. We also know Tai Chi, right, great martial art that you practice by going really slow. So the turtles already have an advantage because they can practice way better than the rest of us. And we know practice makes perfect, so you're good there.
Perfect practice makes then, perfect.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then the third piece of this is at the end of the day, martial arts are a mental discipline.
Yep.
The physical component is important. And what you really learn in Aesop's fables, the tortoise outsmarts the hare and has that mental advantage. Because we know the brain size of reptiles is huge, right, Ben? I mean, we get that from the dinosaurs.
Right.
Definitely.
Yeah. That's why they ruled the planet for so long. So mm-hmm. I think there's a lot here. Yes, we want to tailor our martial arts to the strengths of the Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
But I think history and stories tell us that this was actually a wise choice.
Yeah. Well, and you also have to give appreciate the shell, that like extra weight. You know, we talk about, yeah, you might be off balance, but if you solve the balance issue, that's you know, that gives them like some sumo to them as well. You know, they're going to be they're the also kind of an immovable object, and they can't get, if you punch them in the back, you're going to break your hand. So there's a lot of advantage in defense and in martial arts, often the best offense is a good defense, and the turtles have that in spades.
And in football too, I think that's what they say. Best right. offense, good defense. Well, you know, Dan, I thought you were going to go with physics, given that it is your expertise.
I have a whole physics answer. I have a whole physics answer, Dan.
Well, hold on.
I just wanted to set the record straight on tortoises not being slow.
No, that's fair. Well, you know, I think, as you mentioned, it's the mental game. If the rabbit just ran the race, the rabbit wins. Right? I mean, so it's not that the turtle's faster, it's that the rabbit is cocky and arrogant. I think that's a story about slow and steady, do your job, don't get cocky, don't be arrogant, and then you'll win. Because...
Oh, well, that may be the lesson you took from it, Dan.
Yeah.
The
turtles are faster? Okay. Yeah. That's definitely an interpretation. Definitely one you could come to.
But going to the physics, that slow and steady matters. And okay. I do think the Tai Chi example is a good one, right? And I think two things in the physics for the tortoises, Ben mentioned it, the center of gravity is going to be cool because a lot of what you do in martial arts is use your opponent's center of gravity and their motion against them. Mm-hmm. And the average human martial artist is not going to be good at intuiting where the turtle's center of gravity is. That shell throws them off.
Right.
You think it's in the back, so you're going to make mistakes. I also think that they are ultimately a four-footed creature. You know, I think a lot of martial arts are based on punch. Mm-hmm. The flying kick is a favorite thing of things. Mm-hmm. Even though I know we use that in the cartoons,
yeah.
I would go low with the turtles. I would think of a lot of moves that involve being on your back and spinning, being on your all fours and doing stuff, taking out your enemy's center of gravity from the ground. Because if the turtle goes low, they become way more stable. And the average human is probably not expecting a lot of attacks. And then you have your shell facing up. There's nothing to hit.
Yeah. Well, and you also have to think if they've retained some of their, you know, turtles being a four-legged animal, their arms are just as strong as their legs. So if they have maintained that aspect of their biology, they're going to be able to punch just as hard as they kick, which, and we know that, you know, our legs are much stronger than our arms. So if our arms are as strong as our legs, we would be way more adept martial artists than we are naturally.
That is really interesting because, you know, one of the other things about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is that they have two toes and three fingers. They basically have two fingers and a thumb is kind of how it works, right? So they still have the opposable thing going on here. But, you know, Ben, we've talked about, you know, how animals are really run on the same basic blueprints, and you can adjust things here and there, right? Like, you could give turtles fingers. You can give them three, you can give them five. You know, you could make their arms longer because they have the same joints, right? Like, so these things are, they're not impossible, but I think that, you know, that low center of gravity, I think is important, Denon, because you mentioned that they're 4 foot. I think they might be taller. I don't know exactly how tall the turtles are.
No, they have 4 feet.
Oh, they have 4 feet. Okay. Because I thought you meant they were four, like they were 4 foot tall.
No, I have no idea how tall they are.
Because if they were four,
it looks like 5'6", I'd say.
Okay. Because if they were 4 foot tall, that is a huge advantage, right? Like some of your best, you know, Greco-Roman wrestlers, your Olympians, you know, your martial artists, they are short, stocky, agile, lithe. That's what you need if you really want to take full advantage of the attacking low, right? Like kitten legs, spinning on your shell. You got to be small, and they might be just too big to be small enough, if that makes sense.
That could be true. That could be true.
Yeah.
But I do think I do think it would be fun to design martial arts for them and for the turtles because of how much physics is in that, Dan. And the center of gravity piece, I think, is a lot of fun to play with. But also, you know, it's interesting. It's not quite physics. It's more biology. The retractable head
and
is
arms.
Fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And arms.
Yeah.
Right. But I think the head plays a bigger role, right? Because we really have, when you're a human, there's so much work you have to, I think, put into protecting your head, right?
For all your stuff
because
is.
It's where everything is. Yeah. There's not much you can do about it, right? Like, even if you think of not martial arts, just we've gotten really good at bulletproof vests. I mean, you can kind of wear a helmet, but bulletproofing your head because you need to be able to see and do all of this is doable, but again, still the biggest challenge, right?
Let's just think of bulletproof eyes, right? Like, that's, you can,
right,
the top of your head, but you can't bulletproof your face.
Yeah. It's really hard. I mean, maybe some bulletproof glass over your face as a shield.
Sure.
I don't know.
Maybe.
But the turtles really have an advantage there, right? Because they can naturally go inside their shell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I do wonder if the Ninja Turtles can still do that, considering how long their limbs are now. But, you know, if we assume that they can still do that, that is a great advantage as well.
I believe I have seen it in some episodes, Ben.
Okay.
Well, they can pull anything.
As we established in an earlier episode, my memory isn't what it used to be.
You can pull, you can pull part of them in. You can still protect part of them. And we have seen them used to full effect, them pulling their head. You know, the 1990 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, which I recently saw, they definitely, I think Leonardo pulls his head into his shell to avoid getting hit in the head, which is a great move, by the way.
Yeah. The other thing, though, is I wish they had shown this in the movies. I wish they had retained some of the foot and arm features of actual turtles and tortoises, because turtles and tortoises have like killer claws.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been a cool thing to see. You kind of saw it on the snapping turtle in the movie, but like there are tortoises that can dig through concrete.
Wow.
And if you have that kind of strength in your nails or whatever, as a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle,
you know,
you don't even need the Psi or the sword or whatever. You've got like Wolverine claws built in.
That is true. Or in addition to, right? You know,
or in addition to, yeah. You know, you know, you drop your sword, but you still got the, you now have a sharp weapon without the reach.
Yeah, you got, if you get disarmed, which happens quite a bit. So there's, yeah. I think there's a lot of things we can do with turtles. You know, I just, box turtles are pretty cool. I mean, they're literally pull everything into this little hinge thing under their head. They turn into almost a complete box, hence the name box turtle. So you can, there are cool things here. So we got to get to Splinter. So, you know, we talked about things changing over the years, and I would say Splinter probably changes the most. You know, he's a bloodthirsty, you know, rat who wants to avenge the death of his master in the 1985 comics. He's, you know, an overprotective helicopter parent at best, who I don't think even really knows martial arts until he learns it from the internet later on. Very different, very different. But Splinter, through all of that, is a rat. He's a rat who either learned from a sensei, learned somewhere else. But rats, I think, if you're going to design a martial art for a rat, you got a lot more advantages. You got better hands. You've got more anthropomorphic features. And you got a tail. You've got a fifth or sixth appendage, depending on how often you use your head to hit people with. So you've got a lot of things going for you here, Denon. If you're designing a martial art for a rat, that seems like it could be more fun and more deadly.
Well, I love the idea of designing a martial art for an animal with a tail,
mm-hmm.
right? Yep. The mm-hmm. tail is a fascinating addition because of how much it allows actually interesting counterbalancing. And particularly if you have, I believe the correct term is a prehensile tail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where you can actually grab things with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, imagine using, you know, a third weapon in your tail.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly for the people behind you.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. Hard hit people in front of you. You have to go through your body to get them. But yeah.
Right. Well, it depends. Some rats look like they have a long enough tail
yeah.
that thing can swing around.
Sure. Yeah.
If someone's a little too close to you, mm-hmm. right, and they're distracted by your front weapons, mm-hmm. a tail blade in the back seems like a cool move.
Like a scorpion tail. Yeah.
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 Well. It's, yeah. I mean, rats do not have prehensile tails. Though I do recall in one of the movies I watched, Splinter seeming to grab something with the tail. But at the very least, you could put a thagomizer on that tail, like, and you know, go back to the dinosaur roots,
mm-hmm.
and have you know some deadly spikes that you whack around with it.
A thagomizer, is that what it's called?
Thagomite, that's the official name, thanks to Gary Larson. Gary Larson coined it in a Far Side comic, and then the paleontologists ran with it.
Really? And so that's a spiky yeah. tail, the Thagomeister.
That's what the Stegosaurus tail is called, is a Thagomizer.
Cool. That's a great name. All right, so Thagomizer, boom, we got that on his tail.
The other thing, though, I like about the rat is the rat, well, two things, actually, is one, the rat, being a mammal, has the faster metabolism and all that stuff. So it makes a lot more sense that he could have the energy and the fast twitch muscles and all that stuff to perform the martial arts. But you mentioned the sixth appendage with the head, which made me think of something. Rats, like most rodents, have permanently growing incisors. And so,
oh, right.
you know, they yep. can, you know, they have to chew things
mm-hmm.
to keep their teeth from like growing through the other side of their jaw. So it's the perfect situation. He has to bite things to fight crime, otherwise, you know, he's gonna have dental issues.
Right. That's something to think about, and a huge advantage, and it does give you that sixth appendage. I always thought of the tail as for balance. You know, you mentioned with the center of gravity with turtles, but martial arts is all about balance. As someone who had to do a flying jump kick through a board for my black belt, I'm not the most balanced person in the world. So learning how to do that is very difficult. I'm also tall. My center of gravity is high. And I, you know, can be kind of a klutz despite my natural athletic gifts. So this is part of it. You know, balance is key. I can't skateboard. You know, but if I was a rat and I had a big long tail, maybe I could. Who knows? Maybe I could keep myself upright and not falling on my back like Charlie Brown kicking a football. You know, this could be a huge advantage. And I also want to mention, you know, I'm sure everyone listening has seen the pizza rat videos. So rats, like mm-hmm. the turtles, all love pizza, which is why even mm-hmm. if you don't like rats, you got to like them because they love pizza and they're in the pizza family, guys. And I think that's mm-hmm. that's really important. But, you know, they all live in the sewer. Right. And I think this is one of the key components here. So we got their martial arts, but they have to be hidden. They live like hermits. And this, I think, is tricky. It's the socialization that I think becomes very important here. You know, life underground by yourself can get weird. There's this great documentary called The Wolf Pack, where there's this family, they live in New York in this apartment building. They never leave, and they grow up for 18 years entertaining themselves. So this could be a good thing and a bad thing. But I think that socialization plays a big part on whether they, you know, kick the crap out of bad guys and fight crime, letting their fury out there, or they're the goofy turtles who like to reenact movies with very realistic props. You know, the life in the sewer will form who they really are.
Well, and I think this is something we always wonder about, Dan, right, is nature versus nurture. Mm-hmm. And you have an interesting sort of science situation here where nature was natural in the man-made sense, which we all know is natural, right? Because it was mutagen generated.
Some of us know, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you have an interesting nurture situation from a human point of view. But I do believe, Dan, I could be wrong about this, I do believe many rats and turtles, well, rats certainly live in sewers, and all the turtle pets people get frustrated with, I believe, end up in sewers. So socially, I wonder if there was a more rich community down there than is portrayed in the movies and comics.
Mm. Okay. Do people throw a lot of turtles in the sewer? Is that true?
I mean, hopefully not the sewer, because that's not, maybe the storm drains. But right, yeah. You shouldn't do that anyways, because you shouldn't be putting non-native animals into places they're not from.
No, you shouldn't, but I feel like that's the urban legend, happens. Ben, is that, and in Florida, it's alligators, right? You put all your pet alligators and they end up in the sewer.
Yeah, that's true.
Right,
and,
exactly.
And snakes come in through the pipes there. Yeah, I would say we probably shouldn't be dumping anything but water and possibly, anything we excrete from our bodies in the sewer. But yeah, I'm guessing that I'm sure that there's a lush and vibrant community of rats down there. That's true. Mm-hmm. That's very true.
I mean, that is one thing that kind of bothers me about it, is that they say the sewer, but the sewer is usually full of stuff that you wouldn't want to be hanging out. I hope they really are in like the storm drains, which are normally empty and have fresh water in them and not, yeah, you know, poop water.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we don't really know for sure, unfortunately.
It looked more storm drainish. It definitely looked like, or abandoned underground tunnels that were used for something
else.
Yeah,
I mean, at one point we see them like sneaking through a subway tunnel.
Yeah, in the original movie, Raphael takes April through a subway tunnel that ends up where they are. And they walk a lot of barefoot through that water. So you would hope that even if it's rainwater, it's still probably not a great idea.
At that point, it's, any water in New York on the ground is not good water to be touching.
no, definitely not barefoot.
A little safety tip for our viewers.
Yes.
We've learned about how to deal with toilet water, and now we're learning how to deal with groundwater.
Very important. Well, there's this other great...
City groundwater.
There's this other great documentary. I think it's called Dark Days. Another one from, I think it's from the 80s or 90s. And it basically... It chronicles the mole people of New York, and this is a group of I think they're homeless, I'm not sure, but they live underground. That is their home, basically. They live underground. They're able to use the third rail to create electricity, and they had a community. I don't think it exists anymore, but it was in abandoned subway tunnels and these sections under New York where you have places that people haven't gone into for years. There no one's there, and you could go there and remain undetected. For sure. You know, you could live there and live the kind of life the turtles live, which is refrigerators, TVs, couches. It looks like a living room. It looks like a sitcom living room. And I think in those places, you could do something like that for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you could even do that in LA. There's plenty of abandoned both train tunnels, mm-hmm. but also like a lot of these pedestrian underpasses that are now all locked off. You could certainly sneak into one of those and hang out.
I've definitely seen, you know, it's funny you mention that, because I've driven through even like Beverly Hills, and you'll see occasionally see these like stairwell that goes down and just ends at a door, and I have no idea what's beyond that door. And then you hear rumors of underground, you know, not cities, but underground passages in downtown LA. And I think there's a whole network of this type of stuff, at least in LA. I'm sure in New York, and that's, you know, major cities is where you would have turtles hanging out, ninja mutant turtles hanging out anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is where the deep state lives, Dan. So don't open that door. You'll be in trouble.
I don't want to walk in on a meeting quite just right. yet.
Hence the name deep state. Right. It's underground.
That is true. Well, I think the deep state is the perfect place to put our errors, additions, and omissions section. Things we wanted to talk about, but we didn't quite get to. Denon, is there anything about turtles, mutagen, rats, the deep state, conspiracy theories that you want to talk about that we didn't quite touch on yet?
Well, there's two things. One is, as we alluded to, I just want to say this rat in this one, I'm not even going to, the latest movie, I just couldn't accept, Dan.
I'm with you
and,
on that.
You know, and that's rare for me. But there was an interesting recent TV show that my kids were watching where Splinter, it was kind of, I thought this was a change of Splinter that was cool, where he was a human martial artist who was turned into a rat.
Okay.
And was acting kind of like a couch potato, but was secretly, you know, a martial arts master trained the turtles. And the cool thing was the show he was watching was the show that he had filmed as a human before he turned into a rat.
Okay.
And I thought that was a funny twist.
Oh, that's great. So it's like if Billy Blanks became a rat and then watched his own videos right. to learn karate. Okay.
Exactly. And then the slightly sad moment in this, right? I'm watching this movie, Dan, and I'm a huge turtle fan, and I'm just having these too many senior moments. I don't even remember early on when Splinter's talking about the people going mad and he's chasing and the turtles get knocked and they're in traffic, right? And there's one of them is about to get run over by a car. And I seriously, I'm embarrassed by this, but I'm seriously, I had the moment, I'm like, oh, wait, is there only three turtles and that one dies and that's why there's three?
Then it.
And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, there are four. And he saved them. But I don't know why my brain went that way, Dan, mm-hmm. but that was probably one of my bigger errors in my life. But I genuinely had this momentary thought of, had I forgotten how many turtles there are and is one of them about to die in this movie? This is really dark.
Wow, that's really bad, Denon.
That is
really bad. That's okay. What about you, Ben? Is there anything, any crucial moments in this movie that you forgot in turtle lore even?
Two things as well. First is, if there's an animal likely to be mutated, it would be the turtle. Turtles in LA and many other places are, sea turtles are drawn to the outflows of power plants where, you know, you run the cooling loop with like in the river or the lake or the ocean, because it warms the water up a couple degrees and cold-blooded animals like slightly warmer water. So there's like a colony of sea turtles here in LA that live by the outflow of a power plant.
My God.
How else are you going to get mutated with that?
Right. Yeah.
And the other quick thing I like is I know you guys don't like the Splinter of this movie, but I do like that he established which Chris is the best Chris, and it's Chris Pine.
He did give the definitive answer on that, for sure. I have just one thing here, and, you know, I apologize if it's a little pedantic, but Michelangelo in the newest movie has braces. And who is the orthodontist for that? Like, who is giving a giant Ninja Turtle braces? Like, where does he go? They're trying to keep secret from humans. So is there, this just leads credence to your theory, Denon, that there's a robust community of mutant rats that are also, because of their, you know, unending canines, are very adept at orthodontics. I don't know. Struck me as odd. But there are lots of things that strike me as odd. And if you want to, something strikes you as odd and you want to let us know about it, you can do that. We can be found on social media. You can find the show on X, formerly Twitter, at FGGBTPod, on Facebook, at FGGBT, website, FGGBT.com. If you want to send us a question, easy, questions, at FGGBT.com. But you can get in touch with us individually. Denon, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on all the major social media by flipping my name to at Denon Michael. And when I say all of them, I mean Twitter and Instagram, because if you're going to go on Facebook, you got to stick a prof in there, at Prof Denon Michael. If you're going to find me on YouTube, you keep my name in the order. It's Michael Denon. My website, denonmichael.com. So you can find me in a lot of places. Just play with my name.
I think that's a great, just, well, some combination of Denon, Michael, physics, and Facebook will find you somewhere. And I think that's the best way to do it. What about you, Ben? Is there any consistent method you've come up with where people can find you anywhere that they want to with a simple username?
Yes. You can find me on all the major social media networks at B-Seepser.
How do you spell that?
Spell that B-S-I-E-P-S-E-R.
And if you want to find me, if you don't like my misogynistic jokes for comedy's sake, you can find me. I dare you to come find me on social media. I stand by it. Cicadas rule, especially male ones. And I am on X, formerly Twitter, at Daniel J. Glenn, on Instagram, at The Daniel J. Glenn, Facebook, Analytical Mastermind, and my website, DanielJGlenn.com.
And if you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
And if you're watching us on YouTube, hit the like button, subscribe, and ring that bell so you never miss an episode.
And finally, this show contains powerful information that can be misused by those hell-bent on world domination. Whether you are human, mutant, or some combination thereof, take this information. You got to do good with it. You know, always when given the choice, you want to be a superhero like the Turtles, not a supervillain like Splinter. So remember, make that decision. And until next time, thank you for listening. Fascinating Gadgets, Gizmos, and Gear-Based Technologies is a Glenco production and is produced by me, Daniel J. Glenn. The Fascinating Gadgets, Gizmos, and Gear-Based Technologies introduction was produced by Daniel J. Glenn and Paul Springers, with music and sound design written and performed by Paul Springers. Now, of course, if you're listening to this episode and you've gotten this far, you're going to want to subscribe. Well, how do you do that? We're on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. But if you're not already subscribed to those platforms, I made it easy for you. Go to our website, fgggbt.com. You'll find links to those subscribe buttons and also links to our social media, both for the show and for our individual experts, the members of the Brain Trust. That's all right there. fgggbt.com. And before you leave, don't forget to check out our other episodes. You can find the link at the top of the page for everything we've got, and you'll notice that we've got both a YouTube version and an audio-only version. Depending on what you like, we got it for you. And if you do like those videos, you can go ahead and subscribe to those as well. We're on youtube.com/Daniel J. Glenn. And once again, if you like this show, you're going to like everything that I do. Go to DanielJGlenn.com to find out more. Thank you for listening.